Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Web Sleuth Radio. Actually, not Web Sleuth Radio. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio. And I appreciate you joining us tonight. Thank you very much. We have a very interesting show. Our guests include Atlanta attorney and legal analyst Holly Hughes. We'll be talking with Holly in just a moment. And later on, former Fox correspondent and current ABC News producer Carol McKinley. Carol is based in Denver and will give us the latest in everything that's going on in Colorado. Speaking of going on, what the hell is going on? We have a 17-year-old killing 10-year-old Jessica Ridgway in such a gruesome manner, I doubt we'll ever know all the details. Now, according to the Denver Post, it was Mindy Sigg, Austin's mother, who called the police. We don't know what she told them or what led her to pick up the phone and call, but police are hinting they had a strategy they used to get someone to pick up the phone and call them, just like Mindy Sigg did. Many people think it had to do with the release of the picture of the wooden cross. They think that's connected to the crime scene. Very well could be. And then we have a pair of teenage brothers murdering Autumn Pasquale for her bicycle parts. For her bicycle parts. It was a tip from the brother's mother as well that led police to Autumn's body. Like I said, what the hell is going on? Logan Sigg, 17-year-old killer of Jessica Ridgway. Now, before Sigg was a suspect, cops actually searched the Sigg home. Just didn't go into any in-depth search, but it was Austin who let them in. They questioned Austin at the time, and this was all part of the general search for Jessica going on. That's what I mean when they kind of walked in, I guess, just looked around. The authorities were knocking on everyone's door and questioning them and popping in to take a look. Now, here's the deal. Sigg is also connected through evidence to the attempted abduction of a jogger back in May. And there's more creepy stuff about this guy. The Denver Post reported that Sigg's neighbor, Clark Betchell, said that last summer their cat, Chewy, disappeared. They later found him in half, cut in half, along the footpath that runs behind their house. There's no telling what happened to that beloved family pet, but it's the type of incident that leapt to mind when they heard Jessica had been dismembered. Web Sleuth poster Cy Sister mapped out the location of the neighborhood where six cats were found mutilated. It's very close to where Sigg went to college. Is Sigg responsible for the cat's death? Well, we don't know, but we do know that Austin Sigg was into crime scene investigation and studying mortician science. Some describe him as friendly and brilliant and egotistical, but he could bully. His father has a long and troubled legal history. Sigg's father was convicted of bank fraud, I believe is the conviction. And Sigg's mother is described as a very nice mom, working hard to raise her two sons. So, let me ask you, does anyone out there really think Austin Sigg did not mutilate animals and did not do other horrible things before he moved up to murdering Jessica Ridgway? My guess is we're going to find out that Austin Sigg is one twisted, sick individual. Reportedly, he was obsessed with death, and he was awkward. And some people said he was nice, other people said he wasn't nice. You know what? You know what I should do? I should just do a generic show about a guy who used to mutilate animals and ends up killing and dismembering girls. Because it's the same story all the time, and I'm getting sick of it. I am getting sick of reporting on these creepy teenagers and young men, mostly men, who do these types of things. And you know what? We all see it. We all see it coming. They start mutilating pets. They start being fascinated with death. We can, you know, it's the same stuff over and over. Now, people can be fascinated with death and not turn into serial killers, but I'll tell you what, if you mutilate animals, it is one quick step to mutilating human beings, and that's one of the biggest red flags that you can ever see. We need to learn how to stop making sociopaths in our society. Or, at the very least, recognize the trouble signs early on. My gut tells me, and it's a big gut, let me tell you, my gut tells me that we're going to find out that there were so many signs with Austin Sigg that his poor mother was so overwhelmed she didn't know what to do until something like this happened. Oh, Holly Hughes, aren't you just sick of these same stories over and over and over?
Well, absolutely. And I think what we're going to find out, and I have to just say this right off the top, is these two tragedies that we're talking about, Autumn Pasquale and little Jessica Ridgway, I am heartened by one thing, and that is that the killers, alleged killers at this point, own family members are turning them in. That tells me that there is still some good out there. So if we can take away anything, what we can take away is that these mothers tried to do the right thing, albeit a little late, but let's face it, with these type of killers, they would be serial killers left unchecked. If they were to continue and no one turned them in, we would see a lot more victims piling up. So I have to say that I think that is a fantastic and brave and incredibly painful decision those mothers made. And also, I hope it's a trend, Trish. I really do, because like you, I'm sick and tired of hearing about these things. We had one here in Georgia not too long ago, and it turned out to be a 17, 18-year-old young boy. He did the same thing. He just snatched a little girl from the apartment complex and took her and raped her and put her body in the garbage dumpster to be thrown out like trash. And, you know, we see this over and over. And what I suspect as they start to further investigate Austin Sigg is we're going to see what we call the unholy triad. And that's three things that give you an indication. And if you look back at all of our big serial killers that we know the names of, Bundy and Dahmer and, you know, Gacy, there's three things that we see as children. They are mutilating animals, cruelty to animals. They're bedwetters, and they start fires. They're fire starters. They're fascinated with fire. So I think as we begin to get a full psychological workup on this kid, and that's the first thing the lawyers are going to do is say we want him fully evaluated, because I think we're going to find out that these were also trends that were seen in his early childhood. And again, like you said, how do you stop them? How do you get those warning signs out there, and how do you nip that in the bud before we have another precious little child murdered and becomes a victim?
And that's exactly right, Holly Hughes. We're speaking with Holly Hughes, Atlanta-based attorney and legal analyst. I'm sure you've seen her on many of the cable news programs, and she's actually been pretty much everywhere on TV because she is such a brilliant mind. And I love that unholy triad. That is perfect. Mutilating animals, bedwetters, and starting fires. You're absolutely right. What happens? Are they born this way? Science is debating this over and over. It depends on who you ask. What they're saying is that sociopaths are born with some weird thing in their brain, and then something triggers it, and that's when they become a sociopath. But if they don't have anything that triggers that, whatever it is in their brain, then they go along in life and they're not a sociopath. What triggers it? Well, the good news is, Holly Hughes, we know what triggers it, and that is abuse. That is neglect, and that is horrible family turmoil. Now, I hate to lay everything on the parents, because it does seem like Mindy Sigg, like you said, she did the right thing. She picked up the phone, and there are our parents that wouldn't pick up the phone, like Cindy Anthony or Jackie Peterson. Those mothers wouldn't pick up the phone. They'd rather hide their killer children. But Mindy Sigg picked up the phone and told the police, "My son Austin, you need to check him out." We don't know what she said, but obviously she let them in on the fact that she felt Austin was responsible. But here's the thing. I've talked to a number of psychologists at length about this, Holly, and people think of abuse as physical, you know, beating. Yes, all of that is abuse. Another type of abuse is yelling, the name calling, the constant tearing down. That's a horrible type of abuse. That's just as bad as beating somebody up. But there's a third type of abuse that especially, particularly one psychologist and I had a very long discussion about, and it really surprised me. And I think this will surprise you too, Holly, but it makes sense. This psychologist told me that he can treat people who have been physically or emotionally and verbally abused. It's difficult and it's painful for them, but he can treat them. He said the hardest people to treat when it comes to abuse are those that have been neglected by being ignored. Now, I'm not talking about when you say, okay, kids, just go away. mom needs her time, or, you know, every Friday night, you kids leave me alone. Or I'm talking about horrific, terrible, leaving the child screaming in their crib, leaving the child alone all day, making the child, when they're 5 years old, get their own dinner. That type of ignoring, making it so that the child doesn't even really exist in the parent's mind, that can lead to some horrible, horrible issues with the child later on. So we have, that's my unholy triad, is physical, emotional, and total neglect via ignoring. Have you ever heard that before, about the ignoring factor in this abuse?
Well, absolutely. And what we're talking about is the age-old argument of nature versus nurture. Because you can have two children who are raised in the same household, treated exactly the same. You know, sometimes we see where one child is singled out for the abuse or the neglect. But then other times you'll see where both children were treated exactly the same. One is a serial killer, turns out to be a sociopathic serial killer, and the other one is a, you know, world-renowned doctor. So it really does give credence to the argument of what is, you know, responsible for this. Is it nature? Is it nurture? Is it a combination of the two? And when you really stop and think about what we're talking about here, you're saying, okay, I can treat someone who has been physically abused. I can treat someone who has been psychologically abused. The hardest is neglect. And that makes perfect sense to me, Trish. And the reason is, when you are neglected, there is no interaction. You are simply dismissed as a human being, as an entity, as a living, breathing thing. So you do not see any way to connect because you have been totally discounted. Well, when you're not accountable to anybody, when there is no accountability partner, as we like to call it, then you can do whatever you please. You can kidnap and dismember a child. And it doesn't bother you because who's going to say anything to you about it? They've never paid attention to you before. They've never listened to you before. Whatever you've done, they've just ignored. You know, and a lot of times we see the acting out when they're younger because they're trying to get that attention.
Yes.
And whether it's negative or positive attention, whether it's good or bad attention, it is at least human interaction.
Attention, yes.
Yes.
That's right.
And so that's why that makes sense to me. You know, when you hear the psychologists and psychiatrists talk about, that is the most difficult person to treat and to help and to get to. Well, of course, because they have been marginalized their entire life. And suddenly somebody is saying to them, well, okay, now I'm going to pay attention to you. Now that you've done this totally horrific thing, why would you do such a thing? And they're looking at you like, why wouldn't I?
Mm-hmm.
You never cared what I did before.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's and I do. I think that having prosecuted for 10 years, and I worked on high-profile cases, serial rapists, serial murderers, death penalties, homicides, you know, you name it, I did it. And I think what we see is it's a combination. You know, it's a combination of nature and nurture, or lack
mm-hmm.
of nurture. And I think that's probably what we're going to see here because, you know, by everyone's account, yes, Mindy Sieg is a really wonderful woman, and she's fantastic. But, again, there's only so much that a mother can do
yeah.
if there is a physiological problem in the brain. If you
mm-hmm.
are just not wired properly, and then you combine that with maybe a mother who is single and working two or three jobs and just can't be there all the time. And that's not her fault. She's doing the very best she can.
Right.
But she can't be there to address the issues that are happening and maybe doesn't see them happening.
And that's
so
exactly right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No. This is, unfortunately, as tragic as this case is, I think it'll be a great case study for us to learn. Because when you do see these mothers, you know, turning in their own children, you're thinking, well, they're obviously a decent person at their core, and they're law-abiding, and they want the right thing to happen. So you kind of look at that and you say, okay, so if this mother is so law-abiding and is so wonderful, how did she raise a killer who could mutilate a 10-year-old little girl? And I think that there's a lot we can learn from these type of cases that are, you know, now we're talking about two of them, and hopefully they'll be more prevalent. Hopefully we will see a trend where family members are willing to say, hey, you know what, it is my child, it is my brother, it is my husband, but there is a price to be paid. And what they need to do is put themselves in the place of the victim's family.
Yes, yes.
Think if you were Jessica's mother and say, if I was Jessica's mother, how would I want to be treated? I would want someone with knowledge to come forward. And the other thing is, you know, this may be a way to get her son help. Maybe she has long suspected something was wrong and just honestly did not know how to address it. And now that he'll be put into the criminal justice system and maybe the mental health system, depending on what the evaluations show, this is a way to not only do the right thing for Jessica's family, but also a way to possibly get her own child some help, some much, much needed help.
Exactly. And here's the thing. Like you said, we're talking with Holly Hughes, Atlanta attorney and legal analyst. We're talking about the Jessica Ridgway murder and Austin Sigg's 17-year-old teenager who killed her and dismembered her, and it's just horrific. One other thing that I have learned, too, it's a term that I like to use a lot when we're talking about abuse, and that's mental gymnastics. When you're a young kid, when you're a six-week-old baby or a three-year-old toddler, you do not have the capability to handle abuse and neglect and rejection and all of those horrible things because your brain, you're not grown up. You don't know what it is. All you know is you just have all these waves of horrible emotions going through you. So your brain starts doing mental gymnastics, and it tries to figure out a way to handle it and to fix it, and it can't because you're too young. And that translates into messed up people when you get older. And you're absolutely right. I do think that Austin Sigg's mother appears to be a very decent woman. We just don't know what happened early on in the marriage with the husband, with his father. There could have been all kinds of horrific things going on that caused Austin, for whatever reason, you know, maybe he did have that thing in his brain and it was turned on by some sort of early abuse. And it's so imperative to find out why. I know, I'm not trying to criticize her, but when I watch Nancy Grace and somebody starts to say, you know, this person needs to see a psychiatrist or we need to find out why he did it, she goes ballistic. And will say, oh, you just want to coddle them. You just want to be their best friend. And she tries to humiliate them. That's not the case. Because you want to find out how somebody was created, how somebody became a monster, doesn't mean you don't want to protect society from the monster. It means just the opposite. If we can find out exactly how this happens, then we can start educating people on what not to do. And then if people do see the signs, they can step in and do something. Now, another thing, Holly, that we haven't considered yet, Mindy Sigg could very well have been trying to get her son help over the years, and she just wasn't able to. Perhaps she didn't have insurance. And until somebody does something horrific, you're not going to get free mental health. And maybe she's tried to get him some really intense help and just couldn't do it. We're going to find out so many things about this case. And like you said, Holly Hughes, this is going to be a textbook case of what we can figure out and learn and what not to do as a parent. And let's go to, we have Carol McKinley with us. Carol, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio. I appreciate you joining us tonight. Let me get you on the air here.
You're
and
welcome.
There you go. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Carol, we also have Holly Hughes with us. Holly, I'm sure you know, is an Atlanta attorney, and we all love Holly. We've seen her many times on TV. And you yourself, a former Fox correspondent, as well as an ABC news producer right now, correct?
Right now, yep. I work for ABC quite a bit. Yeah,
okay.
Doing whatever. Yeah, we've had a lot of national news here, so.
Yes. What is in the water in Colorado? I mean, I'm telling you.
Boy, it's bad, isn't it?
It is. So, now, do you have any the latest news on the Jessica Ridgway murder? What was the latest you've heard?
Well, the weekend was really quiet. The latest news is that he's in a juvenile detention center. They're trying to get him, the prosecutor's trying to get him moved to a county jail so that he's with an adult population. I believe he turns 18 soon, like within a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, there's a brand new law.
What is that law? There's a new law that will, this will affect the case as far as Austin Sigg. What is that law?
Yeah, I believe this is the first high profile case that's gonna that it's gonna affect. Basically, and I'm not sure. I've heard it's a Supreme Court law, but I've also heard it's a state law, so I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, if you're under 18, you can't be you can't get the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is really the first time we're going to see someone who, you know, I mean, I think 40 years is the most he could get, in fact.
What? Whoa, back up, Jack.
Yeah, I believe it's 40 years, yeah. Yeah,
when you're
a juvenile,
that's...
He's only 17.
That's the most you can get is 40. Now,
that's
not right.
And he's close. I mean, he's only within months. You know, he did this within months of his, you know, of his 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm. Now, possible? Is it possible for the prosecutor to argue, hey, we want him tried as an adult?
Oh, he's going to.
He's going to try him as an adult.
But even if he tries him as an adult, that law still stands that he won't get the death penalty.
Okay. Well, as long as he's kept away from society forever, that's the thing that we definitely want to see happen, is to make sure that he's not out and about again.
I was in court on I think it was Thursday morning. Yeah, it was Thursday.
Uh-huh.
He's very, very aware. He doesn't act like the James Holmes, the theater shooting guy. He doesn't act like James Holmes did, who was just completely bewildered and wild-eyed and out of it. This kid, I was impressed with his courage in there. I mean, he actually, in court, the judge said, if you don't understand anything, Mr. Sigg, you ask me. You know, raise your hand. And sure enough, he did. You know, he's in the courtroom. His mom's in there. His little brother's in there. The victim's family's in there. Jessica Ridgway's mom. There were eight of them, all dressed in purple. And he was not afraid to raise his hand and say, "Hey, I didn't understand that, and would you please explain it to me?" I thought, "Wow, he's really got presence of mind
to do that." What
for a 17-year-old, don't you think?
What didn't he understand?
I don't remember. It was something technical with the court.
Okay. And what was your impression of his mother? Give us your impression.
His mom?
Mm-hmm.
She was very, she's been, in court she was calm. It was his little brother who was having a hard time. It was just
and how old is he?
Very sad. He's a freshman in high school.
Oh, my God.
Just a heartbreaker. I mean, he just was bent, doubled over and sobbing in the courtroom. You know, that's his big brother.
Oh.
And, you know, you just think, oh, holy geez, you know, it just is so sad to see the drama playing out. Can you imagine? I mean, they found body parts in that house, and the family's living there.
Oh, my God.
You know,
and
I called the mom Friday. She actually answered, so I know she's there. And, and I know they found something. I don't know what kind of body parts, but I know they found something. I mean, God, I can't imagine.
I can't either. Don't you think, and this is hard to answer, but I'm going to ask you anyway, Carol McKinley. Don't you think that the mom or somebody saw some really intense signs leading up to this? You don't go from being just a, you know, wacky teenager to this overnight. I mean, thoughts?
I would think so, because, you know, he's accused of that attempted kidnapping, which happened over Memorial Day, which is the end of May. How do you do stuff like that and just go home and say, "Honey, I'm home. You know, Mom, I'm home. What's for dinner?"
Right.
I mean, how do you? There has to have been, but she has not talked about it at all. We have the only indication that he was maybe getting kind of creepy is from interviews with his college classmates.
And what did they say?
They just said he was creepy. Mm-hmm. That he. Made him feel uncomfortable. But there are just as many who say that he was, they didn't notice anything.
Exactly. And,
you know
there's nothing.
Of course, in that house, there has to have been something going on.
There was something really freaky going on. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It could have been going on for a long time. Could have had something to do with the father. We just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with being interested in mortuary science and studying crime scene investigation. But you pair that with his creepiness, and I don't know if you read this, Carol, but apparently there was a little girl who came home one day who lived by Austin Sigg, and she came home because she said, "Mom, this teenager was making me feel uncomfortable. He was just creepy. He was just bothering me. He was just staring at me. He was just creepy."
A little girl? Like little?
Well, like, you know, 10, 11. And
oh, wow.
Then when Jessica went missing, this little girl told her mom, you know, I know who did it. It was that kid. She didn't know his name.
Oh,
it was that kid
wow.
that was staring at me. And the mom just kind of mm-hmm. thought, oh, you know, the kid's being dramatic, you know, mm-hmm. absolutely. And when mm-hmm. she saw the picture, she said, that's
oh,
him.
Oh, God.
So
my Lord.
I know. He was probably sizing up little girls and just, we don't know how he picked Jessica. He might have been watching her for a long time. Holly Hughes, Atlanta attorney, you are a former prosecutor, correct?
That's right.
On a case like this, where we have somebody that was into mortuary science, that was into crime scene investigation, do you use that as saying, hey, look, this guy's creepy? I mean, because nowadays it's not that creepy anymore because everybody's kind of into it.
Right, exactly. But it goes back to the point that you made just a few seconds ago, and that is when you pair it with all of the other odd behavior, when you pair it with, you know, the neighbor's cat being found cut in half, when you pair it with other animals in the neighborhood being mutilated and found near his residence, when you pair it with all of the other things that are going to come out, and I want to point out for our listeners, just because someone is mentally ill does not mean they're mentally incompetent to stand trial.
Right.
You can have a severe mental illness. You can be a sociopath, but not be mentally incompetent to stand trial. So just because we do want to study it, and it goes back to the point you were talking about, you know, a particular host on one of the television shows just goes ballistic when we say, hey, you know, we need to do a psych on this kid, a psych evaluation. It's not for the purpose of excusing his behavior. It is for the purpose of learning from it. And it reminds me of the old saying that those who do not remember history are doomed to repeat it. And the reason that we do want to do psychological evaluations and the reason we do want to get a full workup on kids like this and like the Holmes, the Colorado shooter at the movie theater, because we do want to learn and we do want to look for those behaviors in younger children and say, okay, we are recognizing this. Let's figure out how to treat it. Let's address it before we have a victim or a whole host of victims, you know. So the reason that you do that is to learn from it and to say in the future, how can we stop this before it becomes a victim crime? And one of the other points I wanted to make was when you talk about he attempted to kidnap this jogger, well, guess what he learned? He learned that he can't handle an adult victim because
right.
he can
oh,
get away. And they're big, and they're strong, and they can
wow.
beat him at his own game.
Huh.
So, of course, he's eyeing little girls in the neighborhood. Of course he is, because he cannot physically take on an adult victim. That didn't work out so well for him. Thank God, because that woman is alive to tell us what happened to her. This little girl, however, was just the kind of victim he needed because he could control her and he could physically overpower her and then do at his will the things that he subsequently did to her. So just because, you know, and it's interesting what Carol is saying, you know, in court he is intelligent and he's on top of it and he's tracking what the judge is saying. And believe you me, all of that is going to be used in the psychological evaluation. So if they try and say, oh, he's not legally competent, guess
mm-hmm.
what? They're going to say, oh,
mm-hmm.
yes, he is. Just because he has a mental illness does not mean he cannot be tried for this murder and this kidnapping and this desecration. Of course he can be tried for it because the test that we use in court is something called the McNaughton Rule.
Right.
And it's can you appreciate the difference between right and wrong? And if you knew what you were doing was wrong and you comprehended that fact and the fact that he hid it and that he disposed of the body, he didn't leave the body laying in his front yard, did he? No, because he knew what he did was wrong. He secreted that body somewhere away from him. So all of those things will play into it. And he can be very mentally ill and still be tried for the crimes he committed. It's not an excuse. It's a learning tool.
Absolutely, Holly Hughes. And one thing I'd like to point out to our listeners, too, about the mentally ill defense, think of Andrea Yates. She killed her children, laid them out, and then called the police. and said, you know, I did it because to save them from going to hell or whatever her reason.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
That person is mentally ill and is incompetent and can't stand trial. But this guy, there is no way he's getting off on any mental illness whatsoever. And, you know, even the abuse excuse, still, here's the thing that we all have to remember. Even when somebody has the abuse excuse, it's sad, it's tragic, but you know what? They've turned into this person that's a danger to society. And first and foremost, we need to be protected from them. But we need to stress again, we have to learn everything. I would love to know from the minute that child was born until, you know, the minute he was arrested, what went on in his life. And I just hope and pray that his mother,
right,
Mindy, is capable to be honest enough and say, here's what happened.
She's a courageous person. I mean, this woman, if anybody's raised a teenage boy, you know, which I have, you got to have your kids take responsibility. And this is not, you know, taking responsibility for having booze in the car. This is taking responsibility for dismembering a child and putting an entire community on alert. And everybody was afraid here. But to have him, make him turn himself in, you know, doing the right thing, I just feel it must have been the most horrible day of her life to find out her son was capable of something like this. I can't imagine. But apparently he's the one who made the phone call, not her.
Oh, really? So it was him, but she prompted that. Holly Hughes, you were going to say something?
Yeah, what I wanted to say, we're talking about, you know, horrible abuses that happen to children. I want to make a couple of points about that. Number one, it is highly possible that the abuse was not from either parent. How many times do we hear about a family friend is abusing the child, and the child never tells because they say, I'll kill your mommy, I'll kill your daddy, I'll kill your younger brother. You know, we just heard from Carol how distraught that poor young boy was. That tells me that he's really close to his brother, and this is breaking his heart. So
That's
we don't know if this was a neighbor who was abusing him when he was young, and I'm not excusing the parents because I don't know them. But what I do know is that his mother had the fortitude and the courage and the wherewithal to say to him, this isn't right, and you've got to be held responsible. So
well,
it's
you know
highly
what? I'll
likely
tell you
that
what,
if
Holly,
there was abuse, that it was from an outside source.
And listen to this. I mean, when she had her son turn himself in, she knew that she would never see him again. His life would never be the same. And she knew
That's
she
right.
was losing him. So what a selfless act that was. I mean, who knows what we all, I'm sure we all in this conversation would do the same thing. But she knew that her beloved son, it would never be the same again. She's losing him.
Exactly.
I mean,
that's right, Carol.
That's
and
drama.
One of the things that Trish and I were talking about before you joined us was, think about this. She also knew that given the facts and circumstances of this case, it was likely he would reoffend. So she also had to consider, oh, my gosh, what if he does it again? And could I possibly live with that? And so that also plays into not only is she sacrificing him, and like you're pointing out, she's never going to hug him again. She's never going to touch him again. She will only talk to him through glass. And he will be incarcerated, hopefully, for the rest of his life. But here's the thing. He will not victimize anyone on the outside ever again.
Absolutely.
And so that also played into her decision. And that, you know, that tells me a great deal about the strength of character of this woman.
Yeah, really.
And one of the other things we need to consider when we start talking about the abuse excuse is it's not going to be an excuse for what you did. When that will come into play in the court system is when you get into the sentencing phase. He's going to be tried, and he's going to be tried as an adult, and he's going to be convicted, is my prediction, as he should be. But here's what's going to happen. When it gets to the sentencing phase, that's when his attorneys are going to trot out anything and everything that ever happened to him that will explain why he became what he became. And it's called a mitigating factor. We have aggravating and we have mitigating circumstances. So as far as aggravating, that's what the prosecutor, the state is going to use. They're going to say he dismembered her, okay? It doesn't get more aggravating than that.
Oh, that
is a horrific, horrific, horrific detail. And so what they're going to say is we want the maximum punishment based on all these aggravating factors. You know, the youth, her age. I mean, come on, a 10-year-old little girl, she can't defend herself against you. So they're going to use all of that. In turn, his lawyers are going to turn around and say, okay, now we're going to talk about mitigating factors. Now we're going to talk about all the terrible things that happened to him and then all the good things that he did do. He was a good student. He was likable. You know, we've been talking about some people say, oh, he was really nice and he was really great. And other people go, wow, he was so creepy I couldn't be around him, you know?
Right.
And that's when all of that will come in. So the abuse excuse will not be used to get him off of the crime. What they will attempt to use it for is to lessen the punishment that is meted out at the end of the day.
Okay, that makes sense.
It
does.
You
know, I wanted to tell you guys, maybe we can ask Holly. I don't know, Trisha, I don't want to take over your show. But
no, go. Hey, go. You guys are a lot more interesting than me. You go.
No, we're not. I just wanted to ask if Holly, do you know much about this no death penalty for juveniles rule? Who is that, a Supreme Court ruling, or is that a state-by-state rule, or what is that?
No, I believe it is a Supreme Court ruling, but here's what I find interesting. You know, we were just talking about this a few minutes ago. What do you do with somebody who's like a day away from their 18th birthday? How do you make that bright line rule? And so what I think is going to happen is that law will be challenged and will be challenged all the way back up. And I'm not 100%, but I'm 99% sure that it is a Supreme Court rule that came down that said you can't execute anybody who was considered a juvenile at the time. But here's what's going to happen.
But he's not 12. He's 17 and
3/4. Exactly. Some prosecutor is going to challenge that and say, okay, you know, we should not have that hard line rule. We shouldn't have, you know, the day of your 18th birthday is the day when suddenly you become executable. And they're going to challenge that. And they're going to say, you know, based on XYZ, based on the aggravating that we were just talking about, the dismemberment, the age of the victim. So I think we're going to see challenges to this, and it'll be interesting. And, of course, this is the kind of thing, sadly, because the justice system moves at a snail's pace, that will take years and years and years before the issue is ultimately decided. But you're going to see states challenging that for this very reason. You know, he goes out the day before his 18th birthday and commits this heinous crime. Are we going to excuse him? What if it's 2 minutes before his 18th birthday?
There you go.
So it's going to be challenged. It's going to go back up, you know, and they're going to say, hey, there are just some cases where if there's aggravating circumstances of this nature, we shouldn't excuse the fact that because of a two-minute rule, he gets the benefit.
We're talking with Holly Hughes, Atlanta-based attorney and legal analyst, and Carol McKinley. She is a producer for ABC News based in Denver. Carol, do you know what the next court date is? What's going to happen
question. Yeah, I believe his the next court date, he is going to be charged, formally charged by Tuesday, I was told by the district attorney here.
And
formal charges by Tuesday, so in 2 days. So I'm glad you asked that question. I can't keep up with everything.
I know.
Because there are a bunch of James Holmes documents being released tomorrow, and we might find out something about a psychiatrist memo that she had on him. And so, but I think that by Tuesday in Jefferson County here in Colorado, which, by the way, is the same county where Columbine happened.
Something in the water,
Colorado.
There. Jeez, something in the water.
So we'll probably hear those charges, I'm thinking Tuesday, because we haven't heard anything about tomorrow.
Let me just go off track really quickly, Carol, and ask you a question about James Holmes. You said there was a psychiatrist note or paper. What do they think it is? What's the theory that's going
to
come out?
It's just a form. It's the form that she had to fill out when she saw him. We'll be able to see the form and see what her assessment was. It's like a 4-page assessment form. The judge agreed to open some things on Friday, and most of what I've heard in the press is that we're gonna see all the victims' names. Well, we don't care about that. I mean, we've seen that forever.
Right.
It's nothing new. But then when I talked to the media attorney who got these things opened, you know, fought to have these things opened, he said, really be looking for that memo that she wrote, that 4-page formatted form.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be unsealed on tomorrow
morning
at 8 o'clock.
That could be explosive. That could really be explosive.
Well, it might
there.
Be. It'll tell how scared she was of him. It might tell us. She might say, it might talk about the threat. I mean, who knows? It might be nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we
it
haven't
could be
seen
nothing,
anything
right.
from that psychiatrist at all yet. And, you mm-hmm. know, everything's been kept confidential because of the doctor-patient privilege. Mm-hmm. And at this point, we're kind of hungry for anything because it's been pretty quiet.
It certainly has been. We're talking now about the Jessica Ridgway murder. 17-year-old Alan Sigg will be charged as an adult with first-degree murder, I'm sure with aggravating circumstances. The death penalty, we don't know if that's going to happen or not. We'll have to wait and see. Carol, you did talk to Mindy Sigg, Austin's mother, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She basically just...
You know, it's funny. The first day this came out, you know, when the arrest came out, we called. Their phone number and address was basically out there in the documents they gave.
Mm-hmm.
And so we called the phone number right away. So we were some of the first people to call. And his aunt answered, and she was sobbing, and she said that his mother convinced him to turn himself in. So that's we talked to him that day, and then we thought they might move somewhere, like go somewhere to a friend's house or something. But on Friday, I was just making my regular calls. I called, and she answered the phone. I said, "Mindy, I feel so terrible for you."
Mm-hmm.
And I explained who I was and all this stuff. And basically, all she said was, "Thank you for your concern. We're asking for silence right now."
Aww.
And she hung up.
Oh, she did.
That was it. But it's unusual for someone to answer the phone like that.
Exactly. Well,
and knowing
she's
in her home, I don't know, it's just creepy. Jesus.
And you have to hope that people are not, harassing her or her other son.
No, I hope not.
I haven't heard it.
Yeah, and her son, too. Yeah, the son, you know, the fact that he has to go to school. He was pulled out of school, apparently.
I hope
the day
so.
That we heard about the arrest, he got pulled out and counseled, and the entire, you know, everybody at the school knew that something was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, here's a strange thing, though. I've been talking to a bunch of kids who go to school in that area. There are like four different high schools. It's a very, Jefferson County is the biggest high school, the biggest school district, 85,000 kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular district uses that area. A lot of the kids, where he left her body is a big traditional area for kids to go to be scared in October.
Really?
It's weird. There are a bunch of buildings out there that are just kind of on the on these big open space properties. If you can just imagine big, rolling hills with scrub brush and yucca plants. It's just ugly. It's good for nothing.
Uh-huh.
In fact, waste treatment people are who found her body. It's just nobody goes back there.
I was wondering who found her. So it was waste treatment people that work in the buildings, or
no? They were going down this weird odd road,
mm-hmm.
you know, as they were going to the dump.
Oh,
and
okay.
And they just saw this trash bag. She mm-hmm. was in a trash bag, and apparently this area. It's a bunch of square miles. It's just nothing but open space and brown grass. It's just good for nothing. But apparently there were a bunch of – it's rumored that the buildings on that property were once run by the Ku Klux Klan.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of the high school kids go out there on Halloween and they play haunted house. They also drink there. They make out there. They make mm-hmm. their little zombie movies there. It's a very traditional place for scary stuff.
Boy,
and I
just
thought, wow, someone needs to look into that. I mean, that is really interesting. I wonder if he left her. I mean, left her body there because with some macabre, you know, fascination with just ghoulishness. Did he just do it as a joke?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just disgusting when you think about it.
Did he do it to add to the scariness of it and to make
yeah.
it more,
yeah.
you know, it will live on now forever in legend
oh,
with high
yeah,
school kids.
Exactly.
And agree. Maybe he did it for that. Maybe he did it that way. We're talking with Carol McKinley. Carol is an ABC News producer based in Denver. And we also have Holly Hughes with us, legal analyst and Atlanta attorney and former prosecutor. I love getting the prosecutor's view on this, Holly.
Me too.
What do you think, just based, and this is a hard question to answer, but I'll ask it anyway, do you think there's going to be any sort of a deal here, or do you think he's just going to go for first-degree murder and a story?
Yeah, they're going to stack him up. There are so many different crimes involved here, because first you have kidnapping. Then you have, if he held her for any period of time before she was killed, it's false imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at aggravated battery
wow.
because of what he did to her body. There could be rape charges if they were able to recover
God.
Any seminal fluid. You are looking at aggravated assault. There may be, if there was a weapon prior to the weapon used to dismember her, you know, if he used any kind of a gun or a knife or a ligature on her, then you're looking at aggravated assault for each and every one of those different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there can be aggravated battery by hitting her. There is the dismemberment, the mutilation of a corpse. I mean, there is a whole host of things
wow.
that he can be charged with. And what
How many charges
do
you think we're looking at?
To.
Are we looking at, like, dozens?
Well, I think you're probably going to be looking at between 5 and 10. Because what you want to do as a prosecutor is you want to charge every crime that is possible. And what that does is it gives you, number one, it gives the jury, when you get into a courtroom, the problem with trial is that by the time we get to court, it's very clinical and it's very cleaned up. And you don't get the horror of looking at body parts and thinking to yourself, this was a child. This was somebody's little girl. And so as a prosecutor, what you need to do is you need to tell the story, as horrific as it is, as heartbreaking as it is, as gruesome as it is. You
wow.
need to be sure that the jury fully comprehends what this defendant did to this child. So you look at all of your evidence. You look at autopsy reports. You look at the marks that were left on the body. Can they be traced back to a particular kind of weapon? So there can be an aggravated assault charge if a gun was used, a knife was used, a ligature was used, a blunt object was used. And you charge everything you have. Not only does it paint the picture for the jury of what this defendant actually did, but it also gives you negotiating room if it becomes necessary. You know,
That's
if
something.
He starts talking and says, hey, you know, she wasn't my first. Well,
mm-hmm.
oh, my gosh, don't you want to know what that story is? Well, if all you've got is one murder charge, you're not going to drop it for him to tell you that information. But if there's a mother
mm-hmm.
out there missing a little girl, you certainly want to get that information. So what you can say is, okay, we'll drop two of the aggravated battery charges. Because bear in mind, for each charge, there is a specified penalty period. So the
mm-hmm.
judge can stack them and make them what we call consecutive. So he might get 40 years on the murder, but then he might get 20 on the kidnapping, and he might get another 20 on an aggravated battery, and another 20 on an aggravated assault, and another 10 on a false imprisonment. Well, if you stack them up, he could come out with a term of years of 100, 200 years to serve,
mm-hmm.
which essentially is a life sentence.
Holly,
well,
why does the prosecutor... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, just to finalize the point, if there is something that he has at exchange that he wants to negotiate with, you have a built-in bargaining room. You're not just looking at one charge, which you're not going to dismiss.
Right.
You can say to him, I'll dismiss this one thing and save you 20 years.
Got it. Carol McKinley, what was your question?
Thanks, Tricia. I guess I wonder, why is the prosecutor, why is he intent on getting the kid into a regular prison population? What's really the difference between a juvenile facility, which he's in right now,
mm-hmm.
and a regular jail? Why would he want to do that? Is it that much worse?
No, I think what he wants to do, there's a couple of different reasons. Number one, you want this defendant who by, you know, all accounts, is a pretty intelligent person. You kind of want to scare him and let him know, this isn't going to stay in juvie, okay?
Okay.
You need to just own up. You need to confess, because now you're going to be in with the big boys, all right? Now, they'll probably still keep him in protective custody because of, number one, the high-profile nature of the case, and number two, you know, his age. But you want to send a message to him that, you know, you're not sleeping in a dormitory anymore. You know, you're not getting all these TV privileges. This isn't juvie. You have now graduated into big boy criminal justice system, okay? So you want to send a message to him. And the other thing you want to do is you want to send a message to the community. I'm not coddling him. He is not a juvenile in my mind. He needs to go and sit in big boy jail just like all the other alleged murderers. And he needs to do exactly what everybody else charged with murder has to do. So I think you want to send a message to the public that you are taking this incredibly seriously and you don't think this is something perpetrated by a young kid. And you want to send a message to the juvenile that, hey, you know what? You might be 3 months away from your 18th birthday, kid, but I'm not playing with
you. Right.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, too, Tricia and Holly. You guys probably don't know this, but this district attorney is his term limited. There's a new DA coming in November. So November 6th, we have a new one. You know,
It's
funny but not funny, because with the James Holmes case, there's a new DA coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So the DA who, you know, originally saw the case is leaving. And with this Austin Sigg case, we have a new DA coming in. The difference is, though, with this with the Arapahoe County case, which is James Holmes, it's a toss-up. We've got a conservative and a Democrat. One is a Democrat judge. One's a conservative death penalty guy. With this one, the guy who's running is unopposed, and he's someone who's been under the current DA. And so he would do what the current DA is doing anyway.
He would just continue what he's doing, right.
Just continue it, yes. But it is interesting to see that there's going to be a, you know, a regime change.
In both big cases. Wow, that is interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how that will affect it. I wonder if it will delay anything. Do you think it will?
No, I mean, only in Arapahoe County. I mean, if the Democrat gets in, they're already politicizing that case. I mean, the Republican is saying, yeah, I'm a death penalty guy. You know, you can trust me to do the right thing in James Holmes. You know, so he's using the death penalty to get elected, and he probably will because it's a hugely Republican area.
Right.
But in Jefferson County, the Democrats are moderate. They're more go-get-crime oriented. And the guy who's going to step in is a moderate Republican, and not much will change, but the guy you've been seeing on TV is not the guy who's going to try this case.
Got it. Ladies, I do have to wrap things up. Holly Hughes, I'd like to go to you first and ask you for some final thoughts on the Jessica Ridgway murder, Austin Sigg, 17-year-old. Final thoughts on that for us. You've first of all, thank you very much. You've added so much to this show, and you've informed and given us so much great information.
She's great.
She is wonderful. We really appreciate it. So, Holly, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure. I find these cases fascinating because we can learn from them. And so my final thought is that, number one, I just have to commend his mother. I'm still, you know, just in actual awe that a mother would turn in her own son for this. So, you know,
absolutely.
My final thought is kudos to her, because that had to be the most heartbreaking decision of her life after the heartbreaking realization that she raised a murderer, and a murderer who was capable of dismembering a child. And so what I would say to anybody who's out there listening, you know, it is an incredibly difficult thing to do, but ultimately it is the only way to live with yourself. So if you do know someone who has been involved in something, as hard as it is, you need to do the right thing. And I really hope that, you know, the mother in New Jersey who turned in her sons for Autumn Pasquale's murder and Mindy Sigg, kudos to them. And ladies, I hope that you are setting a trend. I hope that we are, you know, encouraging other people, as difficult as it is, do the right thing and think of the victim's family and what they're going through.
Holly Hughes, Atlanta attorney, give us your website address, please, my dear.
It's www.hollyhughes.com, and that's on the website. You can also find me on Facebook. I have a page, Holly Hughes Legal Analyst, and you can find me under there as well.
wonderful. Holly, again, we really appreciate it. We're always so much better off after we listen to you and your eloquent ways and your very rational reasoning with everything. Thank you so very, very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much. Good night, Carol. Good night, Tricia.
Good night,
Holly.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
And Carol, final thoughts for you.
Oh, I agree with Holly. I mean, I keep thinking of the mother. Maybe it's because we're all women, and maybe all can all feel that. But it's going to be interesting to see if this kid is actually going to put forth an insanity plea. He seems like he knows what he's doing. I've talked to his friends. His friends say he's brilliant, but kind of a loner. So we'll just see if there's any kind of a plea for insanity.
It should be interesting. And Carol, again, as with Holly, we are always so much better off and more knowledgeable after we have you on the show. And I don't laugh. It's true. And guess what? Now you are tagged as one of our experts in this case. So I will be begging you. Yes, I know. You shouldn't have been so good.
No, call me anytime. No, it's fine.
I certainly will, Carol. Carol McKinley, ABC News producer based in Denver, thank you so much. You have
a
good night now.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, Kimster, are you there?
Yes, I am. And, the chat room's been abuzz about all the things going on in Denver. That might be why we have to have Carol back, because, to keep up with all these cases that have already happened. But I've been there to Denver once, and it looks so beautiful and calm and serene. It's just
Denver's great.
It just blows my mind that all this is going on over there. My heart goes out to the community.
Exactly. Well, Kimster, since we didn't have a show last week, I was in St. Louis with the Class Kids Foundation doing their big print-a-thon, big, huge safety event. I'd like to thank everybody who came out to that. So we're going to have two cold cases tonight, correct?
Right. Well, one of them's kind of small. But before we get started, I have to ask you, did you meet any Web Sleuth members while you were out there?
I met a couple of people, but I knew they were going to be there, and they're also Web Sleuth people. So hopefully next year I'll put a notice out there sooner, so maybe we can have a get together. It's every year in St. Louis, and I know we have people in St. Louis. I just need to organize it better. But you know me, I'm a chicken with my head cut off running around all the time. So
well, I hope you guys come out to Oregon sometime so I can come.
Oh, that would be great. Hey, and I'll tell you what, go to classkids.org if you're looking for a print-a-thon. This is where Mark Class's organization will come and set up these great computers, and parents bring their kids. They get digital fingerprints. They get DNA kits. But the main reason is so Mark can talk to them about safety and how to protect their kids and what to do differently, and the things that would have saved his daughter Polly's life, it could save your child's life. So go to classkids.org if you're interested in maybe getting a print-a-thon to come to your community. So thank you, Kimster. Okay, we're ready. Go for it.
All
right.
It's
the Web Sleuth hot cold case. Two of them today.
That's right.
Oh, there we go. That's better.
Well, Tricia, speaking of Oregon, actually it was a couple of weeks ago, we had a medical examiner from Oregon. Actually, she's often seen in the unidentified cases on NamUs, and she is Dr. Nikki Vance. And she asked the members of Web Sleuth to help with a woman who had drowned in the Willamette River. I'm thinking off the top of my head, I think it was 1992. We had her featured during the time you were gone, so normally we would have talked about her last week. But still, go into the unidentified forum. You'll see it right there. Because it generated a lot of activity last week. So please go and check it out. There were some interesting things. One lady said, or one member, I don't know, lady or man, but was talking about how people work on boats, and that actually the shoes she was found in, the way they were real heavy, it made that person think that maybe she worked on a boat. I thought that was very
interesting.
Intriguing.
So
you never know what kind of clues our members are going to come up with. So
that's right.
I do want to remind everyone that even when we may not have a radio show, the featured cold cases do change every week. So be sure to keep up with them, even if we're not here. So last week we had a medical examiner ask for help. from our Web Sleuth members. And this week, we have a law enforcement detective asking for help. In the case of missing Sandy Seligman, again, I apologize. I don't know that I'm always pronouncing these names right, but I'm going to call him Sandy Seligman, who is a Canadian citizen. Sandy called his mother from Miami, Florida on August 15, 1980 to arrange for her to pick him up at the bus terminal upon his arrival back home to Vancouver, Canada. Sandy returned his rental car to Hertz at the Miami International Airport on August 17, 1980, and was supposed to board Eastern Airlines flight to Seattle on the same day. The initial investigator assigned to the case verified the passenger log and determined that Sandy never made that flight. He has not been seen since.
Oh, wow.
We have very little information out there right now because this case is so cold that it's been almost forgotten. Thank goodness there is a detective. And we also have a member on Web Sleuth who have taken up the gauntlet in order to find justice for Sandy. So, if you want to help find clues to solve this case and get it rolling, because this one's very cold and we need some help. So get it rolling and help the detective assigned to Sandy's disappearance. We also have, like I said, a Web Sleuth member that will assist anyone with if they have questions. Please go to www.websleuth.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Sandy along with a link to his thread. And if you're not a member of Web Sleuth, what do we do, Tricia?
Oh, it is so easy, and it is calorie-free, and it'll even, like, help you trim your hips if you join Web Sleuth. You just join up. All we need is an email address, and boom, you are in like Flynn. It's very easy to join, and even if you come on and just say and post, I'm thinking of you, to a the families that are reading there, that makes all the difference in the world. So you can make a difference. I know some of you think you can't, but you absolutely can if you join Web Sleuth and just participate. Right, Kimster?
That is absolutely right. And I want to thank everybody. Our cold case segment has really been generating more and more interest all the time. I am just impressed with all of you, and thank you all so very much.
We do have an amazing group. They come from all over the world and just get right down to it and start working. And I know that families truly appreciate it as well. Kimster, thank you for all you do. I really appreciate you. And to our Web Sleuth, Forms for Justice members and everybody. Oh, I forgot the legal goo. Remember that Tricia's True Crime Radio is not the same thing as WebSleuth.com LLC, which is a totally, completely different corporate entity. And the opinions expressed on this show are those of the guests and the hosts. And, of course, I take no responsibility for them. So there is your legal goo, my friends, for the day. We will be back next week, same time, 8 o'clock Eastern, Tricia's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events, but we always do it with common sense. Thanks, everybody. Good night.